Hey, and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. I am Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for being here. This week, with the help of a tremendous resource and friend, Tyler Jeske, we have the privilege of releasing an entire week's worth of episodes, previewing the guests from Slugfest. Well, what is Slugfest? The mission of Slugfest is to provide the most comprehensive hitting-specific coaching clinic in the country. The goal is to connect some of the most respected coaches at the highest levels of the game with youth and amateur coaches while providing the highest quality of hitting content to all coaches at all levels. Slugfest is a coaching clinic organized by coaches, for coaches, and in the spirit of not only teaching our players, but each other as well. Well, on today's show, we have the pleasure of speaking with Matt Lawson, who just completed his first season as the Missouri State Bears hitting coach and recruiting coordinator. Prior to that, Matt served as a volunteer assistant and student assistant coach, as well as a graduate manager. Matt was a 14th round draft choice of the Texas Rangers in 2007, advancing as far as AAA Columbus with the Cleveland Indians organization, hitting a career-best 327 in 2012 with Class AA Akron. Lawson graduated with his bachelor's degree in psychology from Missouri State in 2015 before finishing a master's degree in sports management from MSU in the spring of 2017. Matt has played a pivotal role in one of the most successful stretches in Missouri State baseball history while working with the Bears hitters and infielders. And on the show, we talk about how to get our practices to look more game-like, how to help our players make adjustments, and the importance of remembering what it's like to be a player. Here is Matt Lawson. Matt Lawson, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be on, Jonathan. Looking forward to talking hitting.
Absolutely, and so we're doing a preview of Tyler Jeske's Slugfest, and so I'm so excited to get you on the mic. And for our listeners that would like to, you know, what you're going to be talking about, do you mind giving us a preview of your presentation that you'll be presenting on at Slugfest?
I'm going to talk more about team offense. I go down the list of speakers at the Slugfest, and there's a lot of pro guys between Luis Ortiz and Jeff Albert and Dylan Lawson, and maybe even Jerry Weinstein and Jason Hart. So, you know, I think for the people in the audience who can relate, maybe to the younger crowd, like high school stuff or even college coaches, I'm going to try and keep it towards team offense from all facets of that, from development to game management, player roles, things like that.
No, I love that. And that's really one of the main reasons I started this podcast. Is I love player development and I love being in the team aspect, but I feel like the team aspect sometimes gets lost in our quest to be hyper individualized with our players. And, you know, so you being able to do that in the team setting, is that something that you guys pride yourselves in at Missouri State, is just being able to develop each individual player within the team setting?
No question. That's kind of the basis of our program. Everything from who we choose to recruit, how many guys we recruit, the culture here from a relationship aspect, and then resources, how we set up our practices, how we schedule our off-season skills training. Everything's kind of geared towards getting individual players to their highest ceilings and getting the best nine on the field and giving our team a chance to be highly successful and win games in the postseason.
Oh, no doubt. And so for our listeners who, you know, may be on the fence about attending Slugfest and you know, making that final jump and purchasing tickets and flying down, do you mind giving us one takeaway from your presentation that, you know, even the listeners that are listening right now can take something away from our conversation today? You know, what would that be?
It would be the biggest thing that I've learned in my short time doing it is that I've got to be myself. And as I'm learning all this information from all these different people at a really rapid rate, being able to apply that to me and not trying to be somebody else.
Sure.
And I really think that there's a huge takeaway there. The more that I look at the unique aspects of every team.
Well, definitely. And, you know, hosting a podcast, I was talking to my coaches about this the other day, that I get to hear so much great information. And so my issue is how do I apply it to our setting, to our team, to myself? And I absolutely think that that's a great takeaway. You can't do it all, I feel like. And I've tried to do that in the past. Is that something that you've run into as well?
Yeah, I think it's something that we're all going to be dealing with as long as we're coaches, because there's always going to be revolutionary ideas and new resources and technology coming out. And, you know, the human aspect of the game is what makes the game special. And it gives players the ability to continue to develop for long periods of time. You know, even if we're learning things about the swing and biomechanics and technology, if it doesn't apply to human nature, human beings, and psychology of how we compete, then it may not apply exactly to us. So we always have to relate everything back to how does it, how can we make this apply in our system, or even could it down the road in an individual circumstance? Is it going to apply to everything we do, or could it apply to something smaller, maybe just to an individual?
No, that's awesome, and I love that. And so talk to us about when you really started to dig into, you know, the inner workings of the swing and how the best in the world hit. Now, was that during your playing career, or did you start to look at that stuff afterwards?
It was in my playing career for sure. I played 3 years at Missouri State, 2005 and 2007. And, you know, I think I hit 212 as a guy who had an opportunity to play as a freshman at Missouri State. And that wasn't, you know, good enough in my mind, and we weren't good enough. And so I, you know, started seeking out every resource I could to try and make myself better. And you know, you get the pro bowl in minor leagues, and you're trying to keep your career going and win more at bats and create more production and things like that. And so you're learning, and then you're doing trial runs as a player. And if stuff doesn't make sense when you're competing, then it's pretty easy application process there that you can relate later on in your life back to coaching. So I had a 7-year minor league career and was able to come back and right out of that get into coaching. And you know, I think that was extremely valuable to our players, because I could have kind of a unique relationship with them as a coach who, you know, knows what it's like to fail and you know, have flaws and never have exactly the perfect swing for every person. Always, you know, become combating the perfectionist that we all have in us, and try and relate to them. And I try and never leave that. You know, every day that I coach, I'm going to get further away from being a player. And I think it's very valuable to me. It's kind of a priority to me to try and not to lose sight of what it's like to be a player.
And if you were going to say that there's one thing to remember, would that be that it's extremely hard? Like, it's extremely hard to hit. That would be the one, my one takeaway from being a player back in the day, that the further that I get away from playing and actually coaching, that's the one thing that I have to constantly remind myself.
There's no question that being consistently good is extremely hard. You know, and then there are other times when things are clicking, or, you know, something feels right, and all of a sudden it's way easier than it used to be, or what you remembered it being. And we go through these cycles as players where, you know, it's way easier today than it was yesterday, but then we get to tomorrow and now it doesn't feel like it did yesterday. And there's all these different perspectives. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I learned as a pro player was figuring out the routine aspect of, and the professionalism aspect of being a hitter, and being able to take everything in stride, be able to have some clarity in what you value. So be clear in your fundamentals, I guess. But then not be satisfied in your development at the same time. So have a little humility in preparation, but not get into the tinkering mode that's going to make things more complicated.
No, for sure. And listening to you talk about that subject, it takes me to the dugout. Like, that's what I'm thinking whenever you're talking about tinkering and thinking about it too much and things like that. So if you don't mind, dig into a little bit of what you guys talk about during a game. So say a guy is struggling against one guy, and this is a conversation that we've all had as coaches, is we've got a player that thinks too much or thinks not enough, and they come up and they say, "Hey, coach, what do you see? Or what am I doing wrong?" It would obviously depend on the individual and what you guys had spoken about before the game and during practice and things like that. But, you know, what would be your answer be to somebody in a situation like that?
So right now, with where we're at in our, you know, practice time were in team practice. We had 2 weeks of skills groups, you know, right after school started. We had 4 inter squads, 1 exhibition game. We've got another few weeks left here of team practice before we get into skills groups. So there's a lot of what you just described going on right now because some of the new guys have just only had a taste. And so they know that they've had just enough to know that they need to get better. And, you know, some of the returning guys are ahead because they've been through the experiences of, you know, failing, needing to make adjustments and they've also been through the offseason stuff. So the relationship aspect is so important, between the hitting coach and the hitter because under fire in the midst of competition, second guessing yourself and trying to, you know, seek out advice that you haven't heard before only clutters the mind. It doesn't give you necessarily competitive advantage unless you've already been through it and you can hear something from a verbal cue standpoint, maybe, or something to get you grounded, and give you something attainable to compete with, that you can take, you know, into the batter's box and somebody's trying to get you out with everything they've got.
Sure.
So from my perspective, in-game stuff needs to be like review based. Okay. It needs to be stuff that we're reiterating is within the basis of what our system entails. And there's a little bit of individuality to the game planning side of it, based on our player roles and what individuals do and what they're good at. And then the other aspect of it is the game requires us to make adjustments and adaptations, based on how they're trying to get us out. And yeah, we have to make adjustments as hitters. We have to recognize how they're trying to get us out. And it's not necessarily a massive swing adjustment that we're talking about. It's more of an approach-based adjustment that's aligned with what our strategy is. And I know that's very, very general, but if we haven't built the swing in a way that gives us the ability to adjust, I think that we're missing out maybe in how we're developing the swing. It's got to be an athletic movement that has the ability to adjust, the ability to, you know, be on time and rhythm on plane. But we've also got to be able to make decisions and we've got to be able to catch explosive movements to those decisions. And those decisions are kind of rehearsed. And that's development. That's practice. We've got to have done it before.
That's good. No, and that leads me right into my next question, which, you know, we're going to have some listeners that are like, Coach Lawson, I may be new in the game or I may just want to know what you look for in a swing. So do you mind going over some things that if you're out on the recruiting trail or if you get some guys in from the summer, what are some different things that you're looking for in regards to just the swing?
Yeah, I mean, the same things that I look for in our hitters, understanding that, you know, our hitters have a lot more repetitions under their belt than guys I'm looking at on the recruiting trail. But, you know, how guys command their at bats is huge to me because it, from the time that they're, you know, walking to the plate, you know, in the on deck circle and kind of separating the beginning of their at bat from the first pitch of their at bat and how they get their signs and step in the batter's box shows me, you know, the ability to slow the game down and control pace and, you know, things like that that you see guys in the big leagues do and really good college hitters do. Sometimes we take for granted, but then that can be developed as well with maturity and, you know, mentorship, I think. But from an athleticism standpoint, there's gotta be strengths. With that being said, not everybody's going to be able to hit the ball 100 miles an hour, even within our roster. Not everybody's strength is to do that. And, you know, we want to recruit guys who have an explosive ability, but some of the guys' explosive ability may be more towards the running side of it. Some of the guys' explosive ability may not be towards the running side of it.
Sure.
But the player role, the communication, the swing, the intention, the approach, that stuff goes into account with what the player's ability level is. So that's competitiveness, I guess, is finding that competitive advantage. And so when you're watching guys play and from a recruiting aspect, you're watching guys produce. You're looking at the general competitiveness of how can they how can they find ways to win pitches, win at bats, and then project that. So bat speed's huge. And, you know, the same things that we already discussed a little bit in terms of rhythm, playing, timing, even something as simple as winning two strike pitches. Mm-hmm. Not that you're going to win all of them, but you want to find guys who know how to win, whether it's win pitches or win games. That there's a lot that goes into winning.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier that you really started to dig into, you know, a lot of different resources throughout your playing career. And so taking those into account and then some of the resources that you've really dug into lately, what are some of your favorite things that have really shaped your coaching career, whether it be people or books or just Twitter or whatever? So if you don't mind, just throw out a couple of resources that you really like and that our listeners can start to dig into.
Yeah, no, it's all of the above there. People is the first thing that comes to my mind, and that's watching. A lot of players, when they're young, are going to be exposed to some type of mentorship. And for me, it was my dad, you know, and he was exposed to watching players on TV and trying to emulate them. And, you know, so that, you know, for us as coaches, sometimes that's watching video and trying to see which player in our roster looks like that guy. Mm-hmm. And trying to kind of have, you know, trying to fit everybody into the mold of a particular guy, but trying to match some guys with some similar characteristics and then finding the micro moves within that player's style and movement characteristics that are similar to another player's. So, and then you can, you know, point some of that stuff out, because not, you know, especially student athletes, they don't have the time to do that on their own at all times. So.
Sure.
Video is huge for me from a resource standpoint, but then from a philosophical standpoint, and even a creativity standpoint, being able to read books on psychology and read books on, like, a big one for me from a development standpoint, the decision making process, because, you know, if there's two things that we can control in hitting, it's that we take our best swing at a good pitch to hit, and pitch selection is a major component there. And so how can we, you know, eliminate the swing and just talk about the decision making process and being able to have the right perspective on what our eyes are telling us. So looking into some of the science of that in the off season, you know, kind of taking our offensive development system where it is now, and then talking with people who are willing to give up information and share information. So
I love that. And talk to us about your own learning, and, you know, what's something that you've learned lately that's gotten you really excited, or something that you're trying now?
I'm exposing players within our offense to things that are challenging to them that I think are going to, you know, in time make us better. So the idea that we need to be working towards things that are just out of our reach. And then when I see them attaining those small goals, moving that challenge forward. So I'm looking for the right progression, from a decision making standpoint. You know, the initial challenge, especially for young hitters, is the pace of the pitch. So the velocity adjustment, to college baseball, to where 90 is kind of every day. And then the addition of the secondary pitches. And that's a complete game changer to a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Cause, you know, this summer, a lot of them, you know, facing low to mid 90s was a really big deal. And then you see that fairly consistently once you get onto campus with the addition of the off-speed stuff. So, you know, the approach stuff is based on the decision. And so for us, we're, like I kind of touched on earlier, a major component of our offensive practice is based on decision training. Mm-hmm. And so because I don't want their decision to be secondary to their swing, especially when we're in competitive mode, I'm trying to separate the swing from the decision. So we're doing a lot more decision training without the swing involved, to where we're verbalizing the decision.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So what I mean by that specifically is I'll have guys in the bullpen during batting practice, with another coach with them down there, and I'll have a strike zone net set up, and we'll have color coded baseballs, or we'll have numbered baseballs, and they'll have a task at hand that they need to achieve, whether it's they're saying yes or no based on strike or ball. And we may do that rapid fire or we may do it with fastball, curveball mix, or we may do it with every mix. Mm-hmm. We may do it from some different distances. And then, you know, in contrast to ball or strike task, we could do like, whatever they want to hunt. So like in a leverage count, a non-two strike count, that would be their task to say yes or no to. And then there's a timing component to that too, where they have to make that decision quick enough to give themselves a chance to be on time with their barrel. So they would do that like in the round prior to, they would do that like in the round prior to their batting practice round. So it would be part of our batting practice circuit.
Is that something that you guys measure as well, just to try and hold them accountable?
Yeah, to a certain degree. So ways that we can measure that are we can progress. Say a guy's got the opportunity to complete three rounds of decision training. If he passes a certain percentage of those correctly, then he can progress. And if not, he needs to stay right there. So, his progression could be based on his correct answers, I guess. So if I think that something's too easy for them, there isn't too many right, then we need to progress that forward.
Oh, definitely. And I love that. And so, you know, I just remember doing the same thing whenever I was in high school. And I remember, you know, it was just one of those that you were just, you had to do it because you had to do it. And it wasn't fun. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that you enjoyed doing, because half the time with high school kids that they're going to almost drill you every couple pitches. And so I love the idea and I love the aspect of it. And it definitely is better for pitchers and hitters, the more that they can have batters standing in and for you to be able to actually see live pitches. But I'm, you know, as you are going through that, I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I can have somebody standing around that's charting how many they get right or get wrong, or just something that just makes them lock in a little bit more, because high school kids are squirrely at times. And so anything that I can measure and report back, or anything that they can see that they can try and beat, I want them to be able to do that and to be able to flip that competitive switch like you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think, is what you're talking about kind of tracking during bullpen sessions?
Yes.
We're going to do that. Right now we're getting a ton of live ABs, so we don't have I don't think we have time for that or pitches left in our pitcher lounge for that, because it's thrown a lot in games. But we're doing it from, I would say, 20 to 25 feet with a coach throwing, and he may have five balls in his hand and like it's really rapid fire and going fast. So we're trying to go kind of an overspeed training with that.
Okay.
You know, and then something that we've done in the past, there's a lot of opportunity for decision training if we value that. You know, if you think it's important, then there's opportunity for decision training focus in a lot of drills that we do. But there's really infinite ways to do it, even from front toss stuff, and say, like, anytime I flip a two seam, I want you to take it. To where a guy, you know, the immediate impact on that is a guy's hitting position is going to be improved. Mm-hmm. They're going to use their stride with more purpose at that point. You know, and then all of a sudden, players seem to be a little bit more aware of changes to plane and speed changes and things like that. And that's strictly from a decision training perspective. And I really think that whatever as an offense that we value, we're going to be good at. Mm-hmm. So whatever we spend a lot of time on, whatever we say is one of our staples, we're going to be good at. So we have to identify what's important to us. And so the second thing that I talk about in terms of things that we're trying is some differential learning from a trajectory standpoint. So, you know, I think a lot of guys, hitting coaches who study and listen to experienced coaches talk, are familiar with like an external focus during training, mm-hmm. As opposed to a mechanical internal focus. And so, you know, during batting practice rounds, I think an external focus is prevalent. And so we don't do a ton of situational hitting. Instead, we'll do more trajectory based intent within the rounds. Okay. So we'll take rounds where the first half of the batting practice round would be a flat trajectory or a lower trajectory within what's acceptable. And then maybe the second half of the round would be a higher, further resulted batted ball. So specifically, if I'm hitting it in terms of height, between the bottom bar of the L screen to the top bar of the L screen. I'm hitting between 0 to 18 degrees, mm-hmm. Depending on where the pitch is thrown, and depending on how far away you are from the pitch, from the L screen. And then if I'm hitting it over the top of the L screen, and it depends on how high you're hitting it, but for us, it's between about 20 to 40 degrees is what we're shooting for. And, you know, even Gary Ward a long time ago was talking about like guided ball flight zones, mm-hmm. in terms of production, to where we can quantify those without necessarily having the exact launch angle, immediately on the field, to where we know, or a player would have an idea of what a 3 through a 5 flight zone would mean from the bottom bar for us to the top bar of the L screen. And that could go to any part of the park. As where a 6, 7, or 8 out of 10 would be something that's probably going out of the infield for sure. And then, possibly over the fence. I think that makes players more aware of the plane of their swing, and they can attach that to, their approach. The biggest difference there, in terms of application to some higher technology or higher, higher analysis on scouting reports, is we've got a guy who's a low spin rate fastball. Obviously, there's going to be a little more sink at the end of it. There's going to be a little more movement at the end. It's going to feel a little heavier. In contrast to a higher spin fastball, we're going to have to be a little shorter to contact. And that's very general, but that could be the difference in the lower trajectory fielder in batting practice at a lower velo, mm-hmm. and the difference in how tight we're going to keep our swing versus, like, right here, I want to try and hit this over an outfielder's head. I really want to match plane on something that's got a higher approach angle out of the pitcher's hand. I think that makes the communication a little easier. So instead of me having to talk mechanical, even in games with hitters, I can kind of talk to them about being a little shorter of the baseball, like we were when we were hitting a little lower. Go ahead, I want you to hit this higher right here. Mm-hmm. And not getting them on time to do that.
No, I love that. And anything that we can take a concept and make it simpler to understand, especially for the players that are trying to perceive so much information that we're throwing at them all the time. I'm always in for that. But, before you go, I would love, this is my favorite question that I ask, because, we're in it for the kids, and we always want to try and make it fun, as much fun as possible while still competing every single day. But what's something that you guys do in practice that your players can't get enough of and that they just love?
And I've talked to our players about this, because I've heard you ask this question on mm-hmm. your podcast before. And it's always asked individually at times. And it's a different answer for every guy. So, some guys will talk about doing things before practice on their own time that mm-hmm. they really enjoy doing. And then eventually that becomes part of their routines, I think.
Okay.
And then other guys, I've had some guys say they really like doing like tape at stuff, offset. They really like it. Mm-hmm. And guys are going to enjoy something that makes their swing feel good. At least at our level, they do. They enjoy doing things that make them feel prepared, that make them feel like their time's valuable and being used to make them better, like directly to them. When we do mix rounds, and this is something our guys, I've realized, like here in the last few weeks, they like it when I tell them how many, breaking balls I'm going to throw.
Okay.
So if I'm giving them a round of, let's say, 8 pitches, and I'm only going to throw 2 curveballs, they don't know when they're coming, but they're like, I'm only going to throw 2. Because I think there's an ability for a hitter to recognize patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can practice that. So if I tell a guy that I'm only going to throw 2 curveballs, and then I've thrown my 2 curveballs by the 6th pitch, then he knows the last 2 pitches are going to be fastballs. It's equivalent of cheating fastball a little bit. And I think we can see that play out in games at times. We have to have the ability to recognize patterns and see how pitches are throwing hitters. And so, I've had guys say, man, I really like that. That made me feel like practice was very game-like today. So things like that. And then being able to use some variable training tools like underload and head-loaded bats. And, so Eugene kind of showed me some stuff with tennis rackets and foam rollers and doing stuff on some balance pads. And we've got a lot of, for whatever reason, I guess because we're in the Midwest, we've got a lot of guys who have played hockey and so doing things with hockey sticks and things like that. It's always fluid. Our training, we're never like doing the exact same thing from week to week, mm-hmm. Especially in the wintertime. So I don't think we do the same thing enough to where our guys need like fun, quote, you know, quotations around this, but like fun days, because sure. I think every day is pretty fresh.
No, I love that answer. And I think that that's fantastic. And I love that you listen to the podcast too, and you're prepared for that question as well. But I also love that you mentioned that you guys are doing so much new stuff that they don't really need. You don't like, there's not one thing that comes to mind for everybody. And I think that speaks to you as a coach and your coaching staff as well. But, you know, if you don't mind, you know, before you go, where can our listeners get in touch with you? And, you know, what's the best form of contact for you if they have any questions?
Yeah, no, I love answering questions about our program and getting information about our program out there. My email address is Matt Lawson at Missouri State. Just email me. I'm on Twitter, but, you know, I usually just forward stuff. I don't put out a ton of stuff through there just because there's so many good ideas from other people that I feel like it's such a great learning resource on social media that I'm so busy reading what other people are putting out. But yeah, just email me, anybody that wants to talk hitting or anything that we're doing.
Awesome. And I will make sure I link those down in the show notes for you guys. But Matt, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I thought you brought it today, and it was absolutely fantastic. But is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to talk about Slugfest a little bit more.
Go ahead.
Slugfest, you know, and this is Tyler's baby, and I've known Tyler for a long time, and mm-hmm. and he's always he's kind of like me, and he's not a hitting coach, but he's, you know, one of the best resources for me as a hitting coach, because of the wealth of information that he can create and, mm-hmm. and that he seeks out. And, when he started talking to the idea of doing something like this a few years back, he realized that Missouri State was geographically in a great region for this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like 2 to 3 hours away from Kansas City, from St. Louis, Northwest Arkansas, Tulsa, right in the center of the country. And so geographically, we're in a place where a lot of coaches can get to us. You know, Slugfest is not a Missouri State clinic by any means. It's an opportunity for us to further our university's public affairs mission by bringing in people to our facility that have different information than just me, mm-hmm. Or Coach Gutton. And so there's a lot of information we had from attending this thing, and you know, I'm really looking forward to hearing all the speakers at this thing, and I'm really excited to show off our facility too. You know, we're hosting it in our 12,000 square foot indoor facility, and so it gives us the ability not only to have a stage and speakers up on stage, but to put the people in the crowd kind of interacting with the coaches, so that everybody who's going to be speaking at Slugfest is going to get down in the cages and you know, actually show off drills and interact with the crowd, with some hitters. And there's going to be a lot of questions being answered and a lot of communication. And I can't imagine a better way to do it than to have a cage right there with a hitting coach and a bunch of people around watching the coaches be in their element.
Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. Before you go, I'd love to be able to get in touch with you, and we have several different ways of doing so. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at AOTC_podcast. You can join the AOTC Coaches Facebook group, and if you want to be a part of the mini clinic emails, both of those links are listed below. If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a rating or review to help others find and stay ahead of the curve.